feel all right tonight. And I'll bring you Christmas contraband.
All right. Yeah. Hi, everybody. Good morning. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trip Tower overlooking beautiful Michigan Avenue on a Thursday morning. Yeah, man, Thursday. Triple play Thursday day. Did we come up with, wasn't there Thin Lizzy Thursday? Wasn't that one that?
That was the Thursday entry, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. As I've said before, every day should be Thin Lizzy Day. So, hey, I'm Nick DiGilio. I'm your overnight dude, 2 to 5 a.m. here on WGN. The opening bell will be after me at 5, and then Steve Cochran at 6 this morning. Please stay tuned. Got a good show planned for you. We're going to reminisce about ridiculous after-school specials a little bit later on. I saw an article that MeTV posted. I'm friends with MeTV. And they posted, I think it's like 12 or 13 of the synopses and titles of some of the more ridiculous after-school specials. The titles alone are just outstanding. So we'll reminisce a little bit about those coming up later on in the show. My good friend Dmitry Samarov is going to join us. I haven't talked to Dmitry in a long time. It's been a long time. Dmitry was a cab driver for many years. And I would ride with him to work all the time. He would give me a lift to work all the time. And he is he's an amazing artist, really brilliant artist, and who does great sketches and paintings and just extraordinary. But he's become a really successful writer over the past 10 years or so. So it's really exciting. And Dmitry's been writing stuff for the Chicago Reader. He's got a couple of books out, and we will talk about those. And he's just finished a book that he's looking for a publisher for. We'll talk about that. But the latest pieces that he's written for the Reader, one is about Chicago PD and the other crazy Chicago-related shows. And the other is about the fact that he quit social media cold turkey last year. And it's an interesting story. So we'll talk about that. He's an interesting guy anyway. He was a cab driver. He's got a lot of great cab driving stories. Some great ones. And he put them in a couple of books, one of which is called Hack. And so we'll talk about that and more. So Dmitry's a good guy. He's a friend of the show. Check out DmitrySamarov.com. We'll put his website up on our Facebook page. He's got great artwork for sale, and you should check it out. It's beautifully, amazingly talented guy. So he's coming in live after 3 o'clock. So that's some of the stuff we've got coming up. Hey, there's a Hometown Voices thing we want to tell you about. In fact, it's tomorrow. WGN Radio is heading to Naperville for the next stop on the WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour, presented by Allstate, the great Allstate. Join the Steve Cochran Show, my main man, Steve, and his live broadcast at Egg Harbor Cafe in Naperville tomorrow, January 29th, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Start your day off right and enjoy the cafe's special breakfast creation, Very Berry Pancakes, at an exclusive price. You can visit the events page at WGNRadio.com for details. The WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour is presented by Allstate, Chicago's own good hands. So check them out there in Naperville, Steve Cochran and the gang, tomorrow morning on the Hometown Voices Tour presented by Allstate. Sure to tune in for that. So let me officially say hello to my cohorts in crime, the great Dan Shagrew, my producer. Hello, Dan.
Good morning.
How are you, pal?
I'm all right, man. How about yourself?
I'm okay. Excited about Thin Lizzy Thursday?
I am.
I have to say, Dimitri's a big fan of Thin Lizzy.
Oh, there you go. How fortuitous.
So I believe he will enjoy Thin Lizzy Thursday. It's going to be nice to have Dimitri. I've seen him in a long time.
Yeah.
I used to see him every night
right. When
I worked. You know, well, I should say when I worked on the weekends and then did fill-ins and stuff, I would ride in with him. Now you have the incredible thrill of riding in with me to work. Must be an. It's just,
I wonder how the dynamic would change if you sat in the back. Did you sit in the back with them, or did you sit?
I did. Sometimes I sat in front, but most of the time I sat in the back. You know, because I think you're not supposed to have a passenger in the front seat if you're a cabbie. We'll have to ask the actual rules. But if it's just one person, they got to sit in the back. One or two or three people, but you know, when you have more spillover. So, but I did sit in the front a couple of times. But we'll talk about that. Yeah, dynamic. Yeah, Dan, I'll be in the back seat. with the baby seat.
Yeah, I'll just, exactly. The holder and some formula back there.
How's the baby doing, man?
She's doing well. Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
Getting the first tooth.
Ooh, is she teething, chewing on everything?
She's chewing on every single thing she can get her hands on.
I love the picture you sent me, by the way, for Christmas, before we went on Christmas break.
Oh, yeah.
I got Dan a card and some stuff for Christmas for him and Eileen, and then I got Emily a little stuffed minion, and Dan took a picture of it, right? It was in her mouth.
Yep.
Went straight to the mouth. She's a beautiful kid, man.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Oh. You know, I track my sobriety with her birth.
That's right.
It's very close. I quit drinking on the 11th of June.
Right.
And she was born the 29th of May.
24th.
24th of May.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's how you're going to track the sobriety.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. All right. And in the newsroom, it's Esmeralda Leon. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
All right. Yeah. Hey, I want to thank you for sending me that message about the Sci-Fi Spectacular at the Patio Theater in April.
Yeah, it looked like something that you would be into, and you already know about it.
Well, so we've cool. the guys who run it have been on the show before. They've done it for a long time, and the patio happens to be a theater, Esmeralda, that is literally around the corner from where my parents live.
Then it's perfect.
They actually live right around the corner from the Patio Theater. So, and that's a theater that I went to a lot when I was in high school, because it's right by my high school. It's like 6 blocks away from my high school. So, and we've had the owner of the patio. Well, he no longer owns it now. His name is Dimitri, too. How about that? The most popular name ever. But yeah, the patio, they host this, the Sci-Fi Spectacular. The Music Box also does a sci-fi one, too. And if I didn't actually read all the details for this one. I saw the image that you sent me, Esmeralda, was that of the poster of Blade Runner. So I'm assuming they're showing Blade Runner.
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
I forget what else. There's a bunch of... this also. Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, please.
That's why I was like, oh, might want to be into that.
Have you heard that they're making a sequel to Blade Runner? Did you see this?
I did. I saw that, and people are outraged.
I was surprised by your negative reaction, because one of your boys is in it, right?
Well, Gosling's in it.
Yeah.
I love Gosling. And the director's great. The director did Prisoners, Sicario. But I have such a... I have a deep a deep love for Blade Runner. Blade Runner is like one of my favorite movies of all time. All 27 different versions. And there's the question. They're going to do a sequel to the movie, but are they, and this is an important question, legitimate question, especially to us Blade Runner aficionados. What version of the film are they doing a sequel to? Because that makes a difference, man. It actually makes a huge difference. I don't know, but the people involved are talented. I don't know, man. Harrison Ford's coming back. Now, Dan, have you seen the Star Wars movie yet?
You know, I actually saw it yesterday.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I really hope that they don't do to Rick Deckard, you know, like he comes back, like Harrison Ford comes back. Don't.
Yeah.
don't do that. It's long enough for me to hint around. The movie's been out, you know, the Star Wars movie's been out for a month and a half now. So it's long enough for me to hint around something happens to Han Solo in the new Star Wars movie. So, God. Hey, Esmeralda, have you seen it?
I have, but I know what happened.
Yeah, okay. So, at this point, if you don't, you know what I mean?
Right.
Did you know going in?
I had figured it out. I was pleasantly surprised because I had two, like, all right, this is going to happen and this has happened. One of them happened and one of them didn't. So I did get a surprise in the film.
Wait a minute. You thought something was going to happen and didn't happen?
There were two things that, based upon, like, all the headlines I had seen.
Yeah.
That I was expecting to happen.
One didn't.
So the one that didn't happen was a nice, pleasant surprise for me.
You expected?
I expected. I knew that somebody was somebody's father.
Oh.
But it wasn't the person I thought it would
be. All right. What'd you think, by the way?
I mean, phenomenal.
Isn't it great?
It's fun. I didn't realize how funny it was.
It's very funny.
I mean, it was almost too funny at points. It's like, all right, let's take it back a notch. But
like right out of the gate.
Right.
Like a minute into it, the first confrontation between Poe And why am I blanking on?
Yeah, Kylo Ren.
Kylo Ren, yeah. Their confrontation. Am I supposed to say something here now? Right out of the gate.
Right.
But that established him as the Han Solo.
Right.
Well, I mean, Han Solo's in the movie, but
right.
He's like the new Han Solo-ish guy.
Right.
I thought it was great.
Yeah, it was really well done.
Did Eileen go with you?
No, it was my friend Jose.
So, oh, okay.
You, yeah.
Couple of guys going to see Star Wars. Yeah.
3:30 in the afternoon in Village Crossing. Our nice little mandate.
Well, okay. Well, that's cool. But see, that's, you know, I don't know. But I thought Harrison Ford was great in it. And I, you know, if he, I don't know if he's got as much passion for Blade Runner. But I think he's got, I think he, in historically, I always thought he much preferred Blade Runner over Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. That's the vibe I've gotten.
Yeah. And then he comes back, he does a Star Wars movie, and it's like the best performance he's given in like 20 years. So I don't know what he's going to do as Deckard. Now, but this is big. This is a big deal, though. Because for those of you who've seen Esmeralda, have you seen Blade Runner?
I have seen Blade
Runner. Oh, okay. Now, do you remember what version you saw?
I didn't know there was a different version.
There's four different versions of Blade
Runner. Oh, my gosh.
There's four different official cuts of Blade Runner.
Now, is it all the same difference?
There,
do you know what I mean? Like,
okay. There is a major difference between the commercial released version that came out in 1982 and then the first cut that Ridley Scott released in 1993. Major differences. And then the other two were tweaks. Like, they tweaked a few things here and there. So, well, you know what? Let's take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk about it. All right, Esmeralda?
God, I'll look it up.
Okay, look it up, and then we'll find out. I'll try to figure out. Let's all try to figure out what sequel they're actually going to make. And also, Atari is bringing back 100 classic games to the PC. Does that mean I can play with them on my phone? That's going to end up on Straight Out of Context right there. That's how that guy got killed in that car accident.
Yeah.
Man. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we got Atari classics. Speaking of 1982, we've got Atari Classics available, and we'll talk about the Blade Runner and its sequel.
Told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men crazy.
Thin Lizzy Thursday. Yeah. One of my biggest regrets ever is having the opportunity, but not getting the tickets. I had the opportunity to go, but I did not go to see Thin Lizzy and Queen on the same bill. One of the biggest regrets of my life. Thin Lizzy and Queen, man. Can you imagine that? Oh. Ridiculous. Hey, it's Nick DiGilio. How are you, everybody? Thin Lizzy Thursday. Dmitry Samarov, great artist, great writer, great friend, is going to be here live in studio after 3 o'clock. We're going to reminisce about, a little bit later on after that, we're going to reminisce about the ridiculous ABC after school specials. And then we'll reminisce in just a few minutes about Atari bringing back 100 classic games to PC. Dan Shagru, my great producer, Esmeralda Leon are here. As we are every morning from 2 to 5. 312-981-7200. Check us out on Facebook. Hey, we want to hit 12,000 fans. Help us do that. Like us right now. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. And check out our podcasts. iTunes.com. Subscribe. Free. Show up on your instrument, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. Okay. Now, Esmeralda, did you look up the different cuts of Blade Runner?
So I think I saw the director's cut.
Okay,
I'm not quite sure.
I can give you the easiest way for you to kind of figure out which cut. Was there voiceover narration by Harrison Ford in the version you saw? You don't remember.
I'm watching some of the endings, and I for sure don't remember unicorns, like a big old long thing of unicorns.
Okay, then you did not see the director's cut.
Okay, well then, because I don't remember that, but maybe it did, and I was just like, I don't know what's going on.
Well, there's only one shot of a unicorn in it. What ending are they show?
Well, because I guess there's a bunch of different ones, okay. Like a lot of different ones. I for sure did not see the one where they're in a car, driving off.
Okay, all right.
I know that.
Then
that
you
much.
Saw the director's cut then, because the that okay. This is how stupid the look. Here's the thing. Blade Runner came out in 1982. The cut that Ridley Scott wanted to do was not approved by the producers. They were like, it's incomprehensible. We don't understand it. You have to do narration. You have to do a voiceover. So he's like, he didn't want to do it. Ridley Scott didn't want to do it. Harrison Ford absolutely hated the idea. Hated the idea. And they also didn't like the ending because it was so ambiguous. Like, you don't know really what happens at the end. So the studio made Ridley Scott put in the ending where Rick Deckard and Sean Young, the replicant, are in a car driving away. And, like, the voiceover is like, I don't know how long she's going to live, but none of us really do. And in order to fill the shots at the end of the movie, I don't know if you got, do you know this, Dan, this little piece of trivia that I'm about to say?
I don't think so.
Those are shots from the cutting room floor of The Shining. Those those overhead shots of the car, those are from The Shining. So they took, like, Warner Brothers was like, just throw in some shots of the car driving in The Shining. And those were outtakes from The Shining that are used at the end of the movie.
That's pretty crazy.
With Harrison Ford doing the voiceover, like, she's gonna live as long as I want her to live. You know, wow, that's the worst Harrison Ford ever. That was like Nick Nolte. What was it, kind of like Nick? I'm Rick Deckard. So the ending that you should see, Esmeralda, is the elevator doors closing, and that's the end of the movie.
I want to say that's the one I saw.
Well, that's the correct ending. That's the way the movie should end.
Because that whole thing with the car and them driving around, that seemed, I don't remember
it's,
that.
Well, it's stupid. But you know what? When the movie came out, I didn't know any of this. I didn't know that Ridley Scott had made another cut. And I still love the 1982. And every once in a while, I'll watch that version with the terrible narration. And Ridley Scott hated the idea, so he purposely kind of wrote really cheesy, because they said, you should pump up the film noir. Because it is. It's like a futuristic. There's no question about it. It's a futuristic film noir. So they wanted the narration to be very tough, you know, Humphrey Bogart kind of narration. So they wrote the narration, and then Harrison Ford hated it so much that he purposely did horrible line readings. Like, purposely. Because he wanted to screw it up so that the studio would see it and go, no. But the studio saw it and went, okay. So those line readings that Harrison Ford does in the 1982 original cut of Blade Runner are, he was trying to sabotage the movie.
It was funny, too, because when I was watching the movie with the narration, there was a line where he was talking to, I forget what character he is, but is that character actor, that old guy?
Emmett Walsh. Yep.
And the way he describes him, he's like, you know, if this guy had lived a long time ago, he would be the type of guy that would call black people the N-word.
Yep.
And I remember, like, stopping and being like, God, that is a beautiful description, because you learn everything you need to know in a sentence, and, like, being struck by how well-written the narration was, and then, like, reading on about it later, like, how much everybody hated doing it.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that's the one line in the narration that I still think is great. Because he refers to the replicants in the Emmett Walsh's boss refers to the replicants as skin jobs that's like the slang, the horrible demeaning slang that they have for replicants in the future. Well, this, by the way, this was the year that Roy Batty was born. Did you know that? A couple of weeks ago, it was Roy Batty's birthday. Roy
That's
Batty
right,
is the
yeah.
character that Rutger Hauer plays, and so he was born in January of 2016. Happy birthday, Roy. But anyway, so, yeah, I mean, I actually think that line is I still like it. And there are still lines in the narration that I like because it's the movie I saw when I was 17, you know? I was like, and I loved that movie. When I heard there's a director's cut, it came out like 11 years later. The director's cut comes out, and it blew my mind because it's an entirely different movie. It's amazing when you simply take that narration out. When you take that out, it's an entirely different movie, absolutely different and better. And there are a couple of scenes that were added, a couple of things that were tweaked. The one thing that was added, which adds a level of ambiguity to it, is that shot of the unicorn. Deckard falls asleep and he dreams of a unicorn. That's when the argument comes in. And I'll tell you about that. We'll talk about that. And that's the question as to whether what they're going to do with the sequel. It's very important. All right. I think too much about Blade Runner. I really do. I really do. By the way, my ex-wife got me for Christmas, got me the big package with the metal box that has all five cuts of it. There are five cuts. I'm sorry. Five cuts of it. the big metal box with the five cuts in it. One of the best gifts I've ever gotten in my life. All right, we got to take a break. I love this song, man, because it's a black Irish dude from Dublin singing about being a cowboy. I love it. Absolutely love this song. It's all the adventures that Phil Lynott had as a cowboy when he was in Dublin. It's a fantastic song. That's Thin Lizzy for Thin Lizzy Thursday. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live here. Dmitry Samarov, my good friend, artist and writer, will be joining me live after 3 o'clock. It'll be good to see him again. And we'll be talking about some Atari titles. They're bringing back 100 classic games to the PC. We'll talk about that. But we're in the middle of talking about Blade Runner, which is very important. Now, Esmeralda, you did see the director's cut because you don't remember the stupid extraneous driving at the end.
That and, well, I guess the final cut has the long unicorn dream.
Yeah.
So I don't remember seeing that, like, to full, the whole thing.
Yeah, well, you know, that's, okay.
So I think it was the
You probably
cut.
Saw the cut that was released in Ridley Scott's first director's cut that was released in 93. Officially released in 93.
I want to say I did because I remember thinking, director's cut, it's going to be so long.
Yeah, well, it's actually shorter than
Well, there you go.
It is. It's actually, I think it's, no, you know what? I think it's about the same. It's about the same running time. It might be shorter. So what happened was, I'm sorry, there's four versions, not five. But in the box set, the big metal crazy box set gift set that I have, the fifth cut is the TV version. Because when it was shown on network television, they had to cut a bunch of stuff out, but then they added a bunch of crap, stuff that had been cut out. Now, that's kind of a normal thing. Like when John Carpenter's Halloween was first shown on NBC, there was about 15 minutes of extra footage that some of it was filmed while they were filming Halloween 2 that Carpenter didn't even direct, and that they added in as like sort of backstory filler for Michael Myers, and some of it was cut out of the original cut. And they do that a lot. They used to do that a lot. Now network TV doesn't even show movies like that anymore. But they used to do that when, you know, a movie would go on network TV. They would have to cut a bunch of stuff out and they would add stuff. So that cut is included in the box set that I have. So if I've never watched it. I've never actually watched the TV, network TV version of it. And there's also a version that was released on VHS when the movie first came out on VHS in 1983. When it first came out on VHS in 1983, they had the extra violence version. So they had that like the with extra violence. And I saw that version, and it's longer because there's more violence in it. Like, for instance, when Roy and his cohorts finally meet Terrell, the guy who basically invented the replicants and gave him life, he sticks his thumbs underneath Terrell's glasses and sticks his thumbs into his eyes, into his eye sockets. And in the regular cut and in the director's cut, I know I'm getting very confused myself, they don't show his thumbs going into the guy's eyeballs. But in that extra violent scene, it's like 15 seconds straight of this guy's thumbs being buried into his eyes and blood shooting out. So. And then that other cut that was released after 93, there was another one released in 2005, I want to say, where they digitally went in and changed things to make it look better, to make the special effects look a little prettier, which to me, that's a movie where that movie came out in 1982. The special effects in Blade Runner are as good, if not better, than anything that you can see now. The effects in Blade Runner were, I remember the first time I saw Blade Runner, I saw it at the Esquire Theater, big theater downtown, and the sound was fantastic. It was in Dolby, it was in 70 millimeter, and I remember the opening sequence of that movie. I was just astounded. I remember just sitting there going, I've never seen anything like this in my life. Never. Douglas Trumbull, by the way, is the guy who did the effects for that movie. One of the greatest special effects artists and filmmakers. He did a great, great science fiction movie called Silent Running with Bruce Dern. So anyway, now here's the difference now. So they went back and they cleaned some stuff up. Now, Esmeralda, you know who played the stripper with the snake in that movie? And she ends up running through the panes of glass being shot.
Yeah, she's got the blonde hair.
She has a wig, but she takes... No. The blonde hair, that's Daryl Hannah. She's not a stripper.
I don't remember.
She plays Priest. She's with Roy Batty. And she jumps around like a lunatic and puts, you know, crushes Harrison Ford's head between her thighs at one point when she's flipping around doing crazy gymnastics during the last 10 minutes of the movie. That's Daryl Hannah. No, the stripper is Joanna Cassidy. You know who Joanna Cassidy is?
Is she related to David?
No.
Oh, okay.
She is Dolores from Roger Rabbit.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's her. So in Blade Runner, if you watch Blade Runner, it is so clearly a stuntman that is running through those panes of glass. Like, they put Joanna Gleason's wig on a dude and had him run through these sheets of glass as, you know, she's being shot. So when the CGI got really good, that's when Ridley Scott went and fixed that and put her face in. So now if you see the 2005 cut, that's the cut that is essentially the same as the 1993 cut, and visual tweaks here and there to make it look better. So now it looks like when you see her running, getting killed, getting shot in the back, you see her running through these sheets of glass. It looks like Joanna Gleason is running through the sheets of glass because they digitally put her face on there. But when you watch the original cut, it is so clearly like a dude in a wig. All right, but here's the big thing. Now, you're talking about the unicorn stuff, Esmeralda, and this is really important as to what direction they're going to go with this Blade Runner 2. The argument is this, and I don't know what side you stand on, Dan. I don't know what side a lot of people stand on. The argument is this. You are left feeling as though there is a strong possibility that Deckard is himself a replicant. That's what they... And I think, personally, yeah. I think Deckard is a replicant. Absolutely. No one told him. He's a replicant. So I believe that. I didn't believe that with the 1982 cut. I don't believe that at all. Who knows how long she's going to live? I'm going to drive through the mountains of The Shining. So I, you know. But I absolutely believe. Now, where do you stand on that, Dan? Because that's sort of the argument. Because there are people who go, no, he's not. And some people who say he is.
I would prefer if he was.
It makes more sense, doesn't it?
It really does.
Yeah. And it kind of makes the movie even more beautiful.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, Esmeralda. What do you think?
Seems, yeah, because isn't he all tortured?
Yeah.
And stuff?
What do you mean?
You know, like tortured, you know, mind and everything.
Oh, yeah.
That would make sense because...
The key moment in the movie for me is just that cutaway to the unicorn while he's sleeping. Because they talk about these implanted memories that they gave the replicants, you know? And it also, that moment... really reflects, I mean, that speech, by the way, the monologue that Rutger Hauer has on the roof of the building when he's holding the dove at the end of the movie, right before his time is up, he gives that, it's one of the most beautiful, I think, shattering and beautiful monologues ever. I truly adore that monologue. And it's delivered, I mean, Rutger Hauer is amazing in that movie. And Roy Batty is one of my favorite science fiction characters of all time. And that, to me, and there's something about the way Harrison Ford reacts to that monologue as well. That every time I watch the movie now, I watch Ford's performance. Okay, my question is this, though, and I've never, has anybody ever asked Harrison Ford, did Ridley Scott, did anybody ask you or tell you to play it as though he were a replicant? You know, like to subconsciously have that as part of your performance. Because it feels that way to me. Like, because going back and rewatching the movie the 9 million times I've seen it, I watch Ford's performance. I think Ford is great in it. I watch his performance, and he's supposed to be a guy who doesn't know he's a replicant, but there are moments in the movie where he kind of goes, what? You know, like, wait a minute. Huh? This is okay. because he studies replicants, he hunts them down, so he knows, you know, what the deal is. So I don't know. I just find that movie endlessly fascinating, and they could make 27 more cuts of it, and I would buy every one of them. But the big question here is, when they do the sequel, are they going to do the sequel to the original 1982 commercial? Now, Scott's not directing it. Ridley Scott's not directing it. So I don't know. I don't know. But obviously, Esmeralda, it makes a difference, don't you think? Like whether it's a sequel to how the original cut ended, where they're driving around in The Shining, and he's not a replicant. Do you know? I mean, that makes a big difference if they're going to go to the sequel.
Right. So wait, is it going to be a sequel? So you said Harrison Ford will be in it.
Harrison Ford is in it. The lead is Gosling. I don't know anything. They're keeping it under wraps completely.
So
I don't know.
Harrison could just be like a memory or something like that.
Yeah.
Or like a, hey, and then he leaves.
Hey, I'm going to go ride a unicorn.
Because he may not have a big part in it, and they may try to maybe like not restart, but it's a whole different story, but it's under those same circumstances.
Okay. We'll see. Well, we got some text here. Terry says, Nick, you talking about Blade Runner without narration reminds me of finally seeing MASH without the laugh track. It's so much better. I always found the laugh track to be really distracting in MASH. Most of the time because I didn't think MASH was as funny as the laugh track indicated. It's like, what are these fake people laughing at? 262 says, in the novelist's book, Deck is human. Ridley Scott says he's a skin job, not human. He does. How does he still continue? Okay. Well, in the book that Philip K. Dick wrote, which is "Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep," is nothing like the movie. Which is the case with so many of Philip K. Dick, one of the greatest science fiction writers in the history of the medium, has written some of the greatest science fiction stories of all time. And they, with the exception of one movie, they have completely altered everything that Philip K. Dick has ever written. They've based movies on his stories, but the only movie that actually is faithful and very much like a Philip K. Dick story in spirit and in tone and in story is A Scanner Darkly. The Richard Linklater film with Keanu and Robert Downey Jr. and Woody Harrelson and Winona Ryder. That is a phenomenal movie, a beautiful movie, a tragic, sad, awesome film. And that's the only one that's really very faithful. Like, for instance, Philip K. Dick wrote the story that Total Recall is based on, and Total Recall is nothing like the Philip K. Dick story. It's not even remotely close. Not even remotely in the same ballpark. So, yeah. Anyway. So, Blade Runner. Yeah, I think he's a replicant, and I hope they go that route. I really do. But, of course, he's only going to have a small role in it, you know? Gosling is going to be the main guy. And I wonder if they pick it up like in, you know, in the new Star Wars, Dan. I mean, that takes place, you know, as much time that has happened between our real lives and Jedi, that's where this takes place.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
So I'm wondering if they're going to do the same, because it's roughly the same time period. Jedi came out in 83, Blade Runner came out in 82.
Right.
So, all right, we got a break. When we come back, we'll go back to 1982 again. I guess we're just going to reminisce all morning, because Dimitri's going to come in. We're going to reminisce with Dimitri. I haven't seen him in a long time. And then after Dimitri leaves, we're going to talk about the crazy ABC after-school specials. All right, are you a Atari fan? 100 classic games are coming to your PC. Yeah, man. All right, we'll talk about that after we break. I'm taking a break on 720 WGN. Tonight, the throne of the Atari. Yeah. That's right, man. Don't be around. Because there's going to be trouble. There's going to be a jailbreak. See, Phil Lynott, man, he escaped from jail. He broke out of jail. He was a cowboy. Bless you, Esmeralda.
Thank you.
Okay. Esmeralda, did you play video games? Are you a gamer at all?
Yes, more so I was earlier in life.
Yeah.
Had a Nintendo. We did have an Atari. I just heard my mom told me that my brother gave it away.
The 2600? The Atari 2600, the classic one with the cassettes that you would stick in, or the cartridges?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have to say, I was never a gamer. And I'm not now. I don't own any of these Xboxes or the Nintendozies. None of that stuff. Sega, none of it. Is Sega a thing? Do they still have Sega? Is that a...
I don't know. It's not under the Sega name if there is,
okay.
Right?
I don't know.
Dan?
I only know of Saga.
I don't know nothing about no Sega.
I know about Saga and Canada.
I don't think there's a Sega anymore, no.
But I remember playing Atari 2600 at a couple of friends' house when I was in high school. It was a big deal when I was in high school. I went to high school 79 to 83. So that was like when video games really started to peak. Pac-Man, all of that stuff was invented and came to absolute popularity while I was in high school. So the Atari 2600 had a lot of... The game that I liked the most from Atari 2600... with all the bad graphics and all that. I liked Warlords. Do you remember Warlords?
I do not.
It was a great game. Warlords was a great game. Here's what they say, though, but you can get them all now for your PC. And maybe we can play them on our phone. That would be nice, right? You can probably get this stuff for your phone, right? You can get anything for your phone, right, Dan?
Yeah, but it's illegal, I think, and so those shuts get, like, shut down every once in a while.
Oh, okay.
So, like, this is the official, like,
this is official and legal.
Yeah.
You can finally throw away that old Atari 2600. Well, see, now it's okay that your brother got rid of it, Esmeralda.
Yeah, but it's neat to have the thing.
I understand. I'm with you. That you've been hanging on to for these years. Atari is releasing a massive collection of classic games on PC later this year. The bundle will include iconic titles like Asteroids, Warlords, and Tempest. See, I know all those games. For a total of 100 games, it's not exactly hard to find a copy of Centipede, thanks to the multitude of Atari collections that have been released over the years. But the scale of this release makes it among the most definitive. It also includes a few upgrades, adding local and online multiplayer options to several games, as well as support from the Steam controller. This sounds like a pro wrestler. The Steam controller will wrestle Kane tonight. Though, of course, you'll be missing out on the iconic box art from the original releases. No release date has been announced yet, but the Atari Vault is expected to launch as early as this spring. Excited about that? Dan, were you an Atari dude?
You know, I was just the tail end of Atari, so yeah. I only got to play it a little bit before the Nintendo showed up. But I remember Jungle Hunt, which was basically just a guy swinging on vines. That was pretty much the entire game.
And it wasn't even really a guy. It was a blodule of, like, you know. But weren't all the games like that? Weren't they just like just you everything goes vertically? No, horizontally. Like you go.
Correct, horizontal.
You go horizontally, right. You know, and you're swinging. Like that. I remember people being really pissed off about the Superman game because nothing happens. Like you just walk around the city. You know, what city is Metropolis? You walk around Metropolis. I was going to say Gotham City. I'm getting my stuff mixed up. And I'm going to get even more mixed up come March. But he just walks around the city. And then, like, Lois is, like, hanging from a building or something. And then he's got to – you got to find a phone booth. I remember, like, it takes 26 minutes to find, like, a phone. You're walking around Metropolis, you know, trying to find a phone booth. John says, River Raid. I don't know what River Raid is. I'm assuming you swing on vines and you, except there's a river involved. Kathy says Pitfall, the original, and the original Donkey Kong. Donkey Kong was an Atari game? I thought Donkey Kong.
No, maybe it was.
Okay.
That's out. No. I don't.
Joe says.
I want to say no.
I didn't think so either. I thought that Donkey Kong was Nintendo. I mean, because Nintendo, I mean, the dude that everybody loves on Nintendo is Mario.
Oh, no. I like when I searched it, the first thing that comes up, play Donkey Kong, the classic Atari video game.
Oh.
So I guess it was.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't know. Joe says Galaga. That was the only game that I played when I was, the only game that I was ever good at that I can still play is Galaga. Missile Command, Asteroids, Tempest, and Pac-Man. I like Miss Pac-Man better. That was a better game. Were you into those? Did you play the Pac-Man or the Miss Pac-Man?
I played the Miss Pac-Man because we had it at the bar where I worked, Hungry Brain.
Yes, you did.
And we had Galaga in the back, too.
You also had the Nightmare on Elm Street pinball machine.
We did. We got rid of that, though.
Yeah. I used to play the hell out of that thing. The Freddy Krueger Nightmare on Elm Street pinball machine. I love the fact that you guys had that in there. I spent a lot of money on that damn thing. I just want you to know. So if there were nights when I stiffed you, it was because I gave all the money to Freddy. Oh, man. So that's pretty cool, though. I mean, people are probably excited about this, right?
Yeah. Did you ever see the documentary about the E.T. Atari game?
Oh, yeah. Where they found
the... in the desert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That one and that... And then the other... They made another... That documentary about that jerk who won the Donkey Kong competition.
King of Kong.
That was such a great movie. That guy is such a jerk with his mullet in his face. Oh, man. Did you see it, Esmeralda?
I haven't seen it. No,
it's so good. It's so good. Dan, did you see King of Kong?
I have not seen it.
Oh, it's so good. You know, and then you think, how did Adam Sandler screw up Pixels? How do you do that? How do you get the rights to all of those games? You know? All of these video game universes that are all together and you screw it up. I mean, major screwing it up. That's like if Robert Zemeckis screwed up, not quite as important as Who Framed Roger Rabbit, obviously. But like to get all of those characters, all of those cartoon characters, that'll never happen again. You know that, Esmeralda, that this is one of our favorite movies. We both adore Who Framed Roger Rabbit. That movie could never, ever be made now.
Good.
Well,
I want to leave it.
I understand, but I'm saying in terms of like if somebody had the idea to do something similar to it, you would never, ever be able to have a Disney character talking with a Warner Brothers character, hanging out with a Hanna-Barbera character. It would never happen. The fact that one of the reasons, one of the many millions of reasons why Who Framed Roger Rabbit is one of the greatest American films ever made is because of that, is because it took all of these amazing characters and they were all together. That movie makes me cry. I'm not kidding. It makes me cry. I've told you this before. When that disappearing ink reappears and it turns out to be the deed to Toontown and all the toons start dancing and singing, I cry every single time I see it. Every time.
I don't think I cried.
Oh, man. Makes me so happy. That movie just makes me so happy. Oh, ridiculous. And you know what else is cool? Because Mickey Mouse is hanging out with Bugs Bunny in that movie, Mickey Mouse is a jerk. That's the jerkiest behavior that Mickey Mouse has ever been a part of.
It's because, yeah.
Because he's hanging out with Bugs.
Yeah.
They screw up Bob Hoskins' parachute.
No good.
Luckily, the ground in Toontown is rubbery so that he could just bounce right back. Back up. Also,
because he also caught the pole,
yes,
the flagpole
with his head,
and then Tweety,
comes out and
really
almost kills
him
too. Yeah, well, it's Toontown, man. All right, his brother was killed by a toon. I don't know if you know that.
Well, and you would think because he was such a figure in Toontown, they would respect him, but apparently not.
And also, real quick, because we got a break for the news here, really quickly, how amazing is that piano duel between Daffy and Donald? I mean, come on. Well, I mean, what are we talking about here? It's cinematic genius. God, I love that movie.